Good morning. I feel like I spend most of my time these days just trying to make sense of it all. I don't usually do, but and not in a heavy or philosophical way, just the ordinary rhythm of daily life. Like, if you were to open my ChatGPT chat history, it's just me asking questions to trying to understand, I don't know, why the washing machine door won't unlock and let me have my laundry back, or why there's this part of my yard that grows in a circle in this curvy path, darker grass than everywhere else in the yard. I don't know. ChatGPT doesn't know. It's just I assume it's cursed. But I spend a lot of time trying to figure out the whys of it. We have conversations we keep just thinking about. Decisions that we keep replaying in our heads, or situations that don't quite resolve, and they stay with us as we move through the day. And maybe I'm the only one. Maybe you all think I'm crazy, and that's fine. I'm fine being in the crazy boat by myself. We talk things through with people that we trust, right? We have people that we confide in, that we bounce ideas off of. My father is one of those people. I call him on a regular basis, and I don't expect him to have an answer. I just need to talk through whatever the thing is of the day. We try to understand not just what happened, but we look for meaning in all of it. What does it mean? Where do things stand now? What comes next? That's all a normal part of being human, I think, I hope. It's how we stay connected to our lives. It's how we just live, how we remain thoughtful about what we're experiencing instead of just rushing past it all. And in many ways, I think that's a good thing. It's how we learn. It's how we grow. It shows that we try to live with some level of honesty and awareness. We don't just experience life. We interpret it. We carry it. We process it. We try to make sense of it as we go. And sometimes that processing doesn't happen all at once. Sometimes it takes place in motion. I don't really have the time to sit down and think about these things. It happens while I'm pushing a stroller around the neighborhood, or running my taxi service as I take my kids to and from all their things, or in the space between where we've been and what's happening next. It's just two people who are side by side talking it through. It's trying to understand what just happened and what it all means. My most recent puzzle has now assembled a team of people who are all trying to figure out what happened. You might remember, I'm not going to go into the whole story, you might remember about a month or so ago, I told you that one of the wheels just randomly came off our car. We're still trying to figure out what happened, why it happened. We're still trying to fix the damage from what happened. So now I have three different shops full of mechanics who have all looked at this thing, and now they're talking to each other because none of them understand why my steering wheel does this when I drive on the highway. I've replaced all the parts they thought were responsible, and it still does it. They've looked at this thing front to back, top to bottom, left to right, and everything looks mechanically fantastic because most of it's new now, thanks to insurance. And they don't know why my steering wheel wants to rattle my arms out of my shoulders whenever I drive down the highway. They can't figure it out. All of the mechanics in the world cannot figure this out. They're talking to each other, and they're all trying to understand why this is happening, and they just can't connect the dots. That is the moment I'm talking about. We spend so much effort trying to understand why things are happening, and more often than not, we walk away not knowing anything different than when we started. The scripture reading this morning is one of those moments. The word of the Lord from Luke chapter 24, verses 13 through 35. On the same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, talking with each other about all the things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other while you walk along?" They stood still. They looked sad. And then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place in these last few days?" And so he asked them, "What things?" So they replied, They downloaded everything. They vented. They unloaded. They told him everything. They processed it all. The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who is a mighty prophet in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the woman had said, but they did not see him. And then he said to them, "Oh, how foolish you are! How slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory?" And then, beginning with Moses and through all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself and all of the scriptures. As they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, Stay with us, because it's almost evening, the day is nearly over. So he went in to stay with them, and when he was at the table with them, he took bread, he blessed and broke it, he gave it to them. And then their eyes were opened. They recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They looked at each other and said, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?" That same hour, they got up and returned to Jerusalem. They walked back, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together, and they were saying, "The Lord has risen indeed, and he's appeared to Simon." And then they told what had happened on the road and how he had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread. These two people are doing exactly what I just described. They're walking, they're talking, they're processing life. They're just trying to figure out what in the world has actually happened. They're trying to understand it. They're trying to make sense of it, trying to hold the story together in a way that they can live with. And then we hear the line that sits at the center of the story. We had hoped that he was the one. It's such a simple sentence, but it carries so much weight. Not just that something went wrong, but that the story they were living in no longer makes sense. What they believed about Jesus, about what God was doing, about where all this was heading, everything that they thought they understood had come apart. So they do what we do. They retell the story again and again. They explain it. They walk through it. They lay out the details as clearly as they can remember them. They try to connect the dots. And even when Jesus begins to speak, even when he opens the scriptures and he reframes everything that has happened, they're still listening as people who are just trying to make sense of it. And yet, even with a better explanation, even with clear insight, they still don't recognize him. That's the disruption. Understanding is happening, but insight is growing. The story is being retold in a way that actually makes sense. And still, they can't see him for who he is. What they're doing is not wrong. It's thoughtful, it's attentive, even faithful, but it's just not enough on their own. Something is still missing. Something keeps missing until they sit down at the table and he takes bread, he blesses it, he breaks it, and gives it to them. And in that moment, they see. Not on the road, not in the explanation, not during the 7-mile lecture about Moses and all the prophets, not when everything begins to be more understandable, not when they wrap their heads around the facts. They don't really understand what's happened until they sit down at the table and they eat with him. There's no new information in that moment. There's nothing added to what they already know. There's no aha moment in the sense that somebody told them the magic piece of the puzzle that they've been missing this whole time. There's nothing new. But something happens in the act itself, in receiving what he gives and sharing life together in a moment that is familiar, ordinary, embodied. That's where they recognize him. The risen Christ is not found in what we can fully figure out. Christ is recognized in the shared life where he makes himself known. They do not recognize him when they understand more. There's no amount of knowledge that makes this all fall into place. They only recognize him when they receive from him. And even then, it's not something they control. It's not something that they achieve. Their eyes are opened. It's some grammar on a dreary Sunday. I know most of you hate that. Isaac might be the only one here who doesn't. It's passive voice. They don't open their own eyes. Their eyes are open for them. They are made allowed to see. It's given to them. They don't actually ever recognize Jesus. He makes them recognize him. Christ hosts this table. They invite him into their home, but he's the host. He gives the bread. He reveals himself. And in that moment, everything they have been trying to make sense of suddenly is seen differently. Not because they solved the puzzle, but because they encountered him. When they look back on the road, they don't say, "Now we finally understand everything." They say, "Were not our hearts burning within us?" The experience hasn't changed. The conversation hasn't changed. What changes is how they see it all. What once felt confusing is now recognized as something real, something that was happening the whole time. And I think that matters, because so much of our life is spent trying to make things fit into the story the way that we think it should make sense. We can call that a worldview. We can do all sorts of philosophy with this if you really enjoy that kind of thing, but I don't think we need to. I think at the end of it all, we can just accept that we have a way of looking at the world, and we try to cram all the pieces into that view of things to make sense of it. We carry assumptions about how things are supposed to go, about what God is doing, about how our lives should unfold, about what counts as success, as failure. And when something doesn't fit that view of things, we work really, really hard to try to make it fit, to try to explain it. We try to make the pieces line up in a way that feels coherent, something that we can understand, something that we can live with. But sometimes the problem isn't that there's no meaning. Sometimes the problem is that we're trying to force the meaning into a shape that it was just never meant to take. And we look for clarity in one direction while something true is already present in another. Yesterday, they figured out what's wrong with my car, but not on purpose. They were getting ready to call me and tell me I was crazy, that I was making the whole thing up. And I was getting ready to tell them to go take it for a test drive and see it for themselves. And then the mechanic accidentally bumped something. The car is on a lift. It's up in the air. It's turned on. I don't know why, but luckily it was turned on. And he bumped something, and the front wheels started shaking all their own. Not because he bumped it. The car was forcing the wheels to shake side to side. And they finally figured out, oh, this is some sort of computer voodoo. Something in the computer is wrong. There's a sensor that's not calibrated correctly. And so it's actually, the car thinks when I'm driving in a straight line that I'm actually driving over the lane line and off the road. And so it's trying to wake me up thinking I'm asleep. The car has a whole different way of looking at the world that's just absolutely wrong. And nobody could figure this out until they just found it by accident. They didn't do this on their own. Nobody was smart enough. It was not that somebody was just capable enough to finally solve the puzzle. It was an absolute accident that they were able to figure this out. That's what's happening on this road to Emmaus. They're not wrong to talk it through. They're not wrong to search the scriptures to try to diagnose life, but they are still trying to understand the story on their own terms. So they're looking in all the wrong places. And as long as they do that, they can walk with Jesus standing right there talking to him and not see him, because they're paying attention to the wrong thing, or not even that, they're just paying attention to the right thing at slightly the wrong angle. And it's only when they stop trying to control the meaning, and when they stop trying to figure it out, when they just sit down to receive this meal, when they allow themselves to be part of something rather than trying to master it, when they stop trying to understand it, then their eyes are opened. Not because the truth wasn't there before, but because they're finally able to see it, because they stopped trying to force it. They were just willing to see it for what it was. And that changes how we live. It means that the moments where Christ is present in our lives is not limited to things you can understand. I mean, honestly, go back and read through all the Gospels. In like 98% of those stories, Jesus is never there in a way that people understand. He's not limited to your understanding. He's not limited to things making sense. It means that even now, even in the middle of ordinary life, something real may already be happening. How many conversations have you had with yourself, with someone else, and didn't even see Jesus standing there with you the whole time, walking down the road with you, waiting for you to open your eyes and see it? There are moments like that in our lives where they're riddled with them. A relationship that feels strained or distant, or where you later realize there was more care, more patience, more grace than you could see at the time. Or, I don't know, a season of life that feels like failure, where only later you can begin to recognize something was being formed in you that you could not have named in that moment, but was there the whole time. Even something as simple as sitting around a table with people you love, distracted, half present, and only afterward realizing that that moment mattered more than you knew when you were in the middle of it. Nothing about those moments change, but one day you wake up and you see them all differently. You look back and you realized he was there the whole time. When these two people are sitting at the table by themselves and Jesus has now disappeared, of all the things they could have said, they look back at the day they've had and said, we should have seen it the whole time. Our hearts are burning the whole time. How did we not know? Which means the question is not only, what are you trying to figure out? The question really is, what might you already be a part of that you have not yet recognized? What's happening today that is going to amaze you tomorrow? What is God doing in the middle of this crisis you're having that you just can't see because you're so focused on everything that's going wrong? And that's not just where things will become clear someday, but it's paying attention to where Christ is already present, where he meets us, where he's feeding us, where he's revealing himself in ways that we just never expected. Because the risen Christ is not waiting at the end of your understanding. He is already making himself known. We just don't look at it that way. They recognized him in the breaking of the bread. Not in the sermon, not in the singing, not in the walk, not in the prayers or the scripture readings, in the breaking of the bread, in that moment of receiving. It is not an accident that this is how the story turns. It is not an extra detail. It is the point. Because this is where Christ continues to make himself known. We come to this table the same way they did. Not because we have everything figured out, not because we resolved every question, but because we are just invited to receive, to be present, to share in something that is given to us. And it's at this table that we don't prove that we understand. We just receive the life that is offered. And as we do, we trust that the same Christ who walked with those people on the road to Emmaus, who spoke with them, who is made known to them in the breaking of the bread, that he's still present with us now, and here at the table, he still makes himself known. Go from this place. Try to make sense of the world. Try to understand why all the things are happening and try to wrap your head around it. But while you do that, take time to wonder where Christ is already working in your life that you just haven't noticed yet. And go to sleep tonight excited about the possibility of figuring it out tomorrow. Let's stand and sing. Faithful love.